Hare Krishna. Today we're reading in Srimad Bhagavatam how Parikshit Maharaj is riding back to his capital from Shamaka Rishi's ashram, and he'd not yet heard about the curse, but he's lamenting his conduct, and he's regretting it so much that he's disrespected Brahminical culture, that he's praying in the same way that Shamika Rishi was praying to the Lord for forgiveness. He's praying that the wrath of the Brahmana may consume him, his kingdom, his wealth, and so that in the future he won't be misdirected by the same wrong consciousness that led him to commit this original sin. And there are some very interesting points that arise from this. One is that Parikshit Maharaj isn't just wanting to immediately be freed from the results of his offense. Rather, he's concerned about what the consequences of that offense will be in terms of what other types of offenses it will also continue to breed. Offenses, especially to Vaishnavas, are likened to a banyan tree in that they continually sprout new roots. It isn't that just the one offense itself is a dangerous thing, but rather the offense gives root to an offensive mentality that produces many seeds of other types of offenses, and this way the offenses multiply, just like a banyan tree just becomes like a whole forest. One tree becomes and takes over a whole forest. So a nicely planted garden of devotional service becomes completely inundated by just one offense, which is untreated and is allowed to then spread and multiply and ultimately cause havoc in one's spiritual life. Parikshit Maharaj was very concerned about that, and so it was for the removal of this seed of offense that he was praying to the Lord for, even prior to having heard that yes, he was actually cursed, and he would his kingdom wouldn't perish, but he would perish. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport emphasizes the importance of Brahminical culture, cow protection, and the practice of Krishna consciousness. He points out that a country, as well as individual families, of course, if individual families do it, then it becomes a whole country, that they need to practice Brahminical culture or support Brahminical culture for their own well-being. They need to practice Krishna consciousness for their spiritual advancement, and they need to practice cow protection in order to have suitable foodstuffs. The other point of interest was how determined Parikshit Maharaj was in order to be freed from this reaction. He considered that the transgression, the breaking of the principle of not being respectful to a Brahmin required punishment. And, of course, when we see Lord's pastimes and the pastimes of the Lord's devotees, even though devotees may be transcendental, as for instance Parikshit Maharaj was transcendentally situated and in truth really didn't commit a serious offense, but for the sake of Yadyaracharati Shristas, for the sake of setting a proper example for others who are transcendentally situated and who would misuse such conduct to then abuse Brahmanas or Vaishnavas, Parikshit Maharaj did, was punished, and he had to suffer. And we see the same example is there with other Vaishnavas who apparently commit some kind of transgression, despite the fact that they are transcendentally situated, like Maharaj Chitraketu, for example. Still, they're obliged to suffer. So even though Vaishnavas may be above the rules and regulations, still, for the sake of showing others who are not what the consequences of activities are, they will also have to accept reactions like ordinary men. But back to my point, which was that Parikshit Maharaj was so principle-oriented. He considered the principle of Brahmanya Devaya, of protecting Brahmanas, being respectful to Brahmanas, more important than his own sense gratification. And wasn't really sense gratification. It was just his own comfort or discomfort of being thirsty and tired. This is really the basis of civilization or civilized societies, is that civilized societies are based upon principles, and people are meant to mold their lives on the basis of principle. Unfortunately, we see that in Kali Yuga, materialistic societies are societies whose principles, and they've got lots of principles, they've got constitutions, they have laws, plenty, but all of these are based upon men's own idea, intuition of what they think is right and wrong, which ultimately is governed by sense gratification, or at least their version of what the restriction of sense gratification is, and because it is making a compromise with the idea that life is meant for enjoying and not restraint, but abundance of enjoyment, therefore their laws gradually become degraded. This is Aruha Panta, trying to establish the truth from bottom up, which doesn't work. And the Vedic principle is different. The Vedic principle is Avaroha Panta, which is the truth should descend from above, and that values should be based upon absolute principles which don't change, and which aren't meant to cater to individual people's whims or ideas or changing time. Very often people ask us, well, shouldn't Bhagavad Gita is 5,000 years old. Do you really think that it's still relevant in our modern day? Yes, of course it's relevant in our modern day, because it's based on principles that never really change. You may change. Your idea of right and wrong may change, but God's idea of right and wrong doesn't change. And when we stick to that principle, then we actually have a principle-based society. And this is certainly one of Srila Prabhupada's great desires, that the Krishna consciousness movement once again reestablish a principle-based society, that we don't have a society that's simply based upon sense gratification. We don't have a society where everyone adjusts their way of life, their values, to suit their whims, but rather everyone adjusts their lives to fit the principles that have been established by the Lord. And now that Kali Yuga has set in, this is the last leg of Dharma, truthfulness. Truthfulness, sticking to principles, sticking to one's vow, sticking to one's word, something that even, you could say, irreligious people stuck to. The example that comes to mind is of Duryodhan. Srila Prabhupada tells the story of how during the Mahabharata war, Duryodhan was complaining to Bhishma Dev that he wasn't really fighting his fullest. And so Bhishma Dev then took 5 arrows and he said, tomorrow I will kill all the 5 Pandavas with these 5 arrows. If you think that I'm favoring them, then just watch. Krishna came to know of this plan, and so he asked Arjuna. He says, Arjuna, you know, once Duryodhan promised, gave you a boon, and you've not asked for that boon. He said, so now you should go ask for it. And of course, Arjuna was reluctant to do it, but ultimately he did. He went to Duryodhana. He said, remember, you promised me a boon. He said, yes. He says, well, now I'd like you to fulfill it by giving me those 5 arrows. And the point is that despite the fact that Duryodhana knew that this was his only chance for winning the war, because he had given a promise, because that was the principle, therefore he stuck to it. So, similar conduct we see even with Jarasandha, again, another demon, but because he had taken a vow that he never refused whatever a Brahmin asks, even though the Pandavas came, or at least Bhishma and Arjuna and Krishna came, in the guise of Brahmanas, he didn't refuse the request to fight. So sticking to principle, this idea of a principle-centered, value-centered society, it is something that is such an important principle to establish, in a value-centered society based on absolute values, based upon the values that we've received from Krishna through Srila Prabhupada. This is one of the teachings that we get from Srimad Bhagavatam, and certainly a teaching that Srila Prabhupada had repeatedly instructed us. Stick to the original instructions and teachings, values that Krishna has given. Don't change anything. Don't adapt things. We should just